Hello, welcome to Holden Village. Today is Thursday, the 19th of August, 1999. We are in the Creekside Room of Koinonia this afternoon. Your presenter is Craig Morrison. Today's session is 99-2, and it is entitled Ironies in the Fire, Poetry and Illustrations by Craig Morrison. Let's listen in.
I encourage feedback, questions, anything. It's such a hot, lazy afternoon. I'm going to start off with a rather energetic one because I just kind of feel like that. If I don't, then I might fall asleep. This is called Moroccasins. It's inspired by a guy I saw do a performance in North Carolina once. He had rattles on his feet because he was doing an instrument in one hand in his hands, and to keep the rhythm of it, he put them on his shoes, and he was keeping a different rhythm with his shoes, and it just inspired this whole story. It's called Moroccasins. The hip cat moved with a sidestep groove. He had absolutely nothing to prove. With high water socks, he was quick like a fox. You could never put this cat in a box. He had a feather in his hat, yeah, a peacock plume at that. He knew where he was at. His smile was divine, every minute it would shine. He was always keeping time. He'd be dancing his own beatnik jolly rhythm in the street, cause he had rattles on his feet. Just a jingle jangle click and a rickety tick tick tick. His language always was so slick. The entire world is drum, playing till his hands got numb, beating everything and then some. Well, with such a smooth veneer, there was nothing he could fear, and yet his end was drawing near.
Thank you.
His shoes were made of shakers, yet he'd flipped his circuit breaker. He was going to meet his maker. Casually, he glanced around and collapsed into the ground without making another sound. So he left our asteroid and slipped off into the void. No sense being paranoid. He carried Christ inside, so his trek to the other side was a smooth, smooth ride. So this is heaven, he thought. At least I sure know where it's not, else I'd be getting kinda hot. A smile crossed his face. In a constant state of grace, he seemed to remember this place. And God was standing there, golden beard and flowing hair. He didn't seem to have a care. Now God was mighty pleased that our boy was now deceased. And just in time for the feast. Hipcat said, can't go now. Elevation in his brow. I need to get back somehow. If I could only dance and shake and clap my hands, there'd be peace throughout all the lands. God said, no way. You was here to stay. And he turned and he walked away. Hipcat heard a rumble near his navel, and he knew that he was able, so he headed for the dinner table. Everybody found their place, and they all sat down for grace, a smile on each and every face. Hipcat, he picked up a spoon, and well, pretty soon, he was playing yet another tune. They all began to snap, every foot began to tap, transcending every generation gap. Before long, the groove was flowing, he had everybody going, even the angels with their trumpets a-blowing. On those streets it's paved with gold, every echo was tenfold, and heaven's thunder rolled. Well, the people started praising, and the sky became a-brazen. Every soul was just a-crazin'. Pandemonium ensued, and our rattle-flappin' dude was in a really, really, really good mood. Well, God, he just appeared, and everybody feared the way he was grinning so weird. The performance hit its peak. God seemed just about to speak, and the hip cat's knees got weak. My son, I know you started this. That's something I call bliss, which frankly, we're all gonna miss. I've changed my mind. You're going back to the world and all its flack to put rhythm right on track. God waved his mighty thumb and sent him back from where he come. The doctors were all struck dumb. The first drum beat that they heard was his heart, they all concurred. But they wouldn't say a word. Common folks would yell out, "Wow!" But he never took a bow. See, I think he knew somehow. He just turned and walked away and went about his day. And very, very subtly, his feet again began to play.
That's one of my favorites. Did you do that? You did it at the lift a couple weeks ago, didn't you?
Yes, yes.
Oh, wonderful. So, If you were doing it on the stage, would you dress up with maracas on your feet and stuff?
I would not. I. It's not as autobiographical as as it may seem.
I can't imagine anyone else reading it though now after you've done it twice.
I probably would do more musical things with it, or. I like to act out a little of my stuff. This one. It's from a Christian writing group that I was in called Risen from the Dead Poets Society. And we wrote about all kinds of things. And this was an exercise that we did to describe the feeling of how we first felt when we opened up our hearts and had a relationship with Jesus. And it kind of captures that honeymoon experience. It's called Baby Bloomer. I can't dismiss this bliss that's come from somewhere very strange. It's deep inside where I used to hide, deny this urge to change. To guide my course, this outside force, remorse is far from me. I simply say, you are the way, and pray, act faithfully. Now you've adopted, joy co-opted, stopped from fateful death. I love your spirit. Your word, I hear it. My ear knows your faithful breath. This dynamic birth, a heaven on earth. You're worthy of honor and praise. Be a good savior. Mold my behavior. I'll savor you all of my days. Forgive my mistakes. Whatever it takes, the stakes are so very high. Your love is free. Now part of me. I agree. It's you and I. These pieces are all written from different parts of my experience, different stops along the way. Some are, I feel, rather, well, they all could, some are more mature than others, I guess I would say. But yet, I look forward to writing even more mature stuff. But I do appreciate that childlike perspective, which kind of runs through a lot of it. This is called The Time Machine. Tranquil humming, grinding purr, mundane routines that reoccur, marching into ages hence, from past that could not give defense. The time machine borrows from yesterday, sorrows from tomorrows since passed away. Its face stares out from time unknown, the ageless ticking of an endless drone. Arms incessant, revolving around, its circumference never quite touching the ground. It tells of the beast that devours all things, vast appetite and never-ending strings. The time machine's winters and springs and gears reflect the moonlight of countless years. Now and again it is filled with alarm, clutching the hours with its short arm. Numerals of Rome are inscribed on its face as it travels forever, not moving through space. The chimes ring on wood and metals. Pendulum swinging, the dust never settles. Speaking volumes without having to talk. The time machine, antique grandfather clock.
Yeah.
Can we do a Love Supreme? I don't know if you have a format for it.
I do not. This is Fiona, my fiance, and she's a little more familiar with my work. I'm a percussionist, rhythmist, whatever. I love to experiment with different forms of rhythm, meter, and I love jazz. It's just, I guess, a funny quirk about me, but I love it. And I wrote one on John Coltrane's birthday. They were playing such good music, and it's kind of got a swing tempo to it. And if I can find it, then I'm going to read it. Because it is, I almost have it memorized, but I think I'll... No, it's okay. Here it is. A Love Supreme. I don't have an illustration for it. Maybe close your eyes and just kind of picture the images. The big fat bass notes a slide stepping down all around like the sound of an elephant's pound. As the fingers a move, how the singer can linger and soothe to the groove as it moves up and down. The voice of choice is the talk of the boys. Her melodious waves, they all behave like narcotic noise. Then the horn is born with the triumphant tone. As it's blown, golden gleam and blue notes scream. They seem to stand alone. The smoothness of his reed can be read, yes indeed, like the music from his head or his heart. He doesn't need a sheet or a guide to express what's inside. Just the fire of the soul plays a role. Inspiration comes along for the ride. And the drums, here he comes with the cymbal clash, the throb of the tom and the deep bass drum. At the solo, he speeds up and bats his eyelashes. He smashes and crashes and flashes and dashes. Snare can be heard everywhere. From ashes, he rises like a phoenix, entices the music once more. And how sweet the score! The crowd off the floor, on its feet, just to greet. The arms raised in praise, and a new standard stays. At the end of the song, they're crying encore. And jazz is far richer than ever before.
Now, Craig, do you ever put instrumentation behind you in a
read? Oh, I'd love to, but I can't play more than one instrument at a time.
No, but I mean, if you had a little band.
Yes, I certainly would. In fact, I'm leaning towards making a CD first and then putting the book. If I had an endless source of money and lots of gene pool of creative musicians around, I'd probably make a CD-ROM. With text and graphics and music, but I'm a poor poet, so I'm just gonna take what I get.
But have you let anyone that might consider publishing it read it yet? Or hear it yet? Have you sent anything away?
Little by little. God is my agent, and he has his own time frame. But yeah, I guess I don't like rejection, so I haven't, I can't say I've fully explored that possibility yet. I'm gonna read another one.
Okay. I can talk to you some other time.
Yeah, please do. I need encouragement. This is Funhouse. I also read it at the Lyft that night. But it's special to me. It's probably still my favorite thing that I've written because it captures not only children's imaginations, but older people's every walk, I don't know, they seem to relate to it. And it was one that I didn't really have an idea for. I just woke up one day with a fun phrase in my head and wouldn't get out of bed until it came out. And it's neat. I didn't really write this per se. I didn't set down and try and write it. Funhouse. There's laughter in the rafters. Afterthoughts are on the roof. Today window panes will feel no pain, the shutters feeling so aloof. The chimney is smoking busily, rolling its own in a doleful way. The skeletons are in the closet, for in the darkness they must stay. The bathroom's constipated, resigning itself to ex-lax duels. The wall safe is in trouble, having misplaced the family jewels. The front door is in open arms, yet arming itself with high-tech alarms. The study is pondering, its visions are wandering, as the vanity's flaunting its self-proclaimed charms. The carpet feels it's walked upon, riddled with self-conscious doubt. The bedroom isn't making love, so it lustfully feels left out. The kitchen is cooking impatiently, watching a pot that will never boil. The garage undertakes another fix-it project, hoping the neighbors will notice its toil. The television rattles on, attention it demands, while the couch is growing a patch of potatoes with cultivating hands. The basement's clutter just makes it mutter, forgotten abysmally, while the furnace is sweating, forever dreading being turned up constantly. The manic depressive stairway, not knowing whether it's up or down, and as if it had nothing else to do, the chandelier just hangs around. The lawn is dying of thirst, crying out for the garden hose, but the hose is coiled comfortably, lethargically in a doze. All in all, a happy home, it begs no pleas or pardons. Yet not exactly the type of house for better homes and gardens. I think I am gonna read this one, which people had interesting reactions to this one the other night. This is called Morse. It's another experiment in rhythm meter. I don't know Morse code, but it's written as if I did. Kind of with the words in the dot, dot, dash kind of thing. I guess I should have learned what that little clicking noise meant. All the time it would rat-a-tat like a woodpecker, incessantly clicking. I never listened. Should have paid more attention. Fear, fire, foe, we never did know what that clicking noise meant. Always did admire the random rhythms. I never thought twice. The bomb found its mark. Smoke. Incessant woodpecker won't save our souls. Click, tick, tick, tick. Talk like a clock run amok on some ethereal time. No time, sinking fast. Okay, Mom, I'll stop tap tapping. Stop tap tapping. Never will stop the tapping. I guess I should have learned what that clicking noise meant. So every time I think I can define my writing, I write something like that. And it's like, that doesn't fit into the mold that I call my writing. I guess that's good. Yes, if there were kids here, I probably would do more kid-oriented stuff. This is my poem on alcohol. I had a roommate that was an interesting inspiration for a few different poems. It's called I'll Drink to That. The chalice parts the fool's lips. He sips while soul is closed. A token remembrance of 10,000 trips to the cellar for drunken repose. Nostalgia taps him on the head like an ice pick on top of a mountain. His elbow elevates to up the cup. he's engulfed in a frothy fountain. His synapses explode, then take a vacation. He enjoys his brain on recreation. He walks the flat line of the body entire, awaiting sunrise with its pain and fire. But for now, should the chance to get drunk come along, he will host every toast and join any song. Alcoholic, he's addicted, tripped up victim, so they say. His bloodshot eyes read no surprise, unless it's taken away. A wise man will make a mistake once and learn, but the fool repeats them at every turn. The views of the author are purely the opinion of the author, and not the views of Holden Village, although they may coincide. Here's a fun one. I don't know. I don't know what it is. Sometimes I do some abstract pen and ink and then put it along with a poem. This poem's called Hide and Seek. There's poetry hiding in the slumbery confines of counterpane as I manufacture dreams. Seems too fleeting to grasp in the slithery skin of a scaly snake as it frigidly finds food. The mood of poetry's just out of reach on a weary grandfather's semi-intoxicated grin as he laughs at nothing at all. It calls in the acrid smell of wood smoke round a boisterous bonfire, or desiring the soft touch of velvet on smooth skin. Within the poetry concealed in the aha feeling of sudden inspiration is celebration of jubilation. Its creation lurks under the glowing green canopy of a willow tree on a sunny day. It may well be in the ominous maraca chorus of cicadas on a hot, humid summer night. Each bite it waits in the taste of clover honey sticking to a windpipe. Ripe poetry hangs from the orchard with the torture of not being plucked. It's tucked, hiding inside the tip of a pen as creativity leaks onto a page, leaving indelible marks. Someone said they thought that was like amoebas the other night and inside of a human body. I said, okay, I'll take that. You win the prize for guessing what it is.
I thought it looked like a maze.
A maze, that's cool. I like words like maze because I can use them in multiple. I could say, yeah, that's corny.
Yeah, I knew you were gonna say that.
Sorry, that's me. This is my circus piece. And here it is. Under the Big Top. And I might have read this the other night at the lift. The sturdy hurdy-gurdy's revolutions add confusion to the organ grinder's grinding, winding ever on and on. The monkey is his flunky, with a cymbal in each very nimble hand on which it stands, clanging ceaseless thereupon. The flowing cotton candy's knowing time is near to disappear. A muscle wet and pink helps its hopes of life to sink. With resolve it dissolves down the sticky smile of a riled child reconciled to fun. The clowns they dance around, prance the grounds and making faces, taking roses from their vases, juggling noses in the sun. The bearded lady's shady stubble sprouting on the double earns her ticket and right to picket the barber who harbors no trouble. The quilted men on stilts are built beside the gilded ride, right outside the roller coaster, just above the hot dog roaster, energetic weenie boaster, tipsy toaster, full of pride. May the circus never work us after laughter leaves the Big Top, and the feeling that we capture be a rapture undenied. Tall Wall of Tales. Talking about living, my favorite thing to do, but from a safe distance from experience's view. Talking about living, yet not living at all, it's my imagination. There's no tale too tall. Talking about living from behind a door, as long as it's closed, I'm safe and secure. Talking about living, but it's only talk. I get where I need to without having to walk. Talking about living, but I'm fantasizing. The future and past, just romanticizing. Talking about living and how sweet it is to see the other guy's journey, as long as it's his. Talking about living, but only to a measure. Avoiding all the pain, but missing out on pleasure. Talking about living, yet never risking much. Wrapped up in security, such shall be the crutch. Talking about living from the umbrella of routine. Never getting rained on and never getting clean. Talking about living from underneath my mask. This world of speculation is such an easy task. Talking about living, but I've got nothing to say, since all I did was talk about living today. That's me on certain days. I'll admit it. I've grown fond of a safe lifestyle. I think I might read one that has, I haven't drawn my illustration for it yet. This is called Canine Karma. Amid heavy breathing and the offshoot snort, the animal recreates on the old Davenport. His heaving slumber at a steady pace, simple contentment on his droopy face. Now and again, his body will shiver as he dreams intensely, his leg muscles quiver. Feeling exhausted from the day's escapade, yet he jumps to attention when a strange noise is made. Epitome of alertness and joy overflowing as his master arrives. He's excited, outgoing, his tail wagging mightily in a fervent display, bludgeoning everything in his hapless way. His longing gaze tracks the master's motion, in search of dinner or some such notion. Forever salivating over canine cuisine, voraciously consuming till his bowl is licked clean. Eminently satisfied, for the moment at least, his body is rested and his hunger has ceased. Parading his prowess to the very few, he stalks the abode for something to chew. He'll resist a foot and decline a leg, carrying himself not so low as to beg. After all, in the long run, his needs are met. He eats, sleeps, and plays. He has no regret. With a melancholy smile, he returns to bed, felines chasing field mice, racing through his head. This is the one that I was talking about. I did not do this illustration, but that makes it all the more special. It's a gift of a friend, He's my friend, missionary down to Ecuador, and he's told me many stories about being there. And this one special mountain, Chimborazo, it's a 20,000 foot mountain in the Andes. And I wrote this, and he asked me, he said, when did you go to Ecuador? So I guess I captured his stories about it. But no, I've not been any time lately to Ecuador. It's called Chimborazo. Somewhere in a backstage mountain town in Ecuador, an old withered countryman grins wide and broad. He's never known, been shown any other way to be. His aged hat, patched, connected, not attached. Spicy hair is pepper gray, he lives another day. Solitude and community. He ambles leisurely down a rough-hewn dirt road, leading a contentedly laden ox with a sagging back. 5 more miles to market. Every plodding footstep through these Andes high trails, he savors, admiring the awesome quilted landscapes in the valley far below. The jutting peak's physique leaves him speechless, though he rarely speaks anyway. Thoughts of praise to whomever made this place and put him there. His smile stretches yet further. The ox snorts and playfully urges him forward, step after blissful step. At sundown, he'll reach the market, sell his wares, and find a camp for the night. Exchanging stories with young and old, he'll see a sparkle in each eye as the firelight glints on joy. The smoke will curl around every old patched hat as laughter fills the air amidst panpipes, melodies, and the mighty wind, breath of he who made that place. If any of you guys were here on Monday in Jan Otto's Bible study to hear the story of Jesus withering the fig tree, I have my own poem about it. It's called Jesus Withered My Dinner. This is not scripture. I could have sworn there was a fig tree here yesterday. It's really very strange. Every day for the last 10 years, I've walked this road, and there's always been a fig tree right here. Now there's nothing but a tangly, withered shrub, a gangly goat scrub. I just don't understand. But I remember those figs. Oh, those luscious figs. I'd stop here in the shade and pop a few succulent fruits into my mouth. They melted on the tongue. Why, it seemed like yesterday they tasted especially good. As if every fig were my first ever. Oh, what joy! Each one better than the last until... I'm sure I couldn't have eaten them all. Well, maybe I did feel a little bloated, walking down the road as I passed those 13 scraggly men going the other direction. But even if I did eat all the fruit, they were the most delicious figs I'll ever taste. The hand of God couldn't have plucked a finer fig yesterday. Yet I could have sworn there was a fig tree right here. A lot of times I enjoy the theatrical aspect of writing as well. That's why it's hard for me to just say, come to a poetry reading, because I have a hard time sitting through, you know, a lot of poetry.
But I wonder if this is easier because I have a hard time too.
Uh-huh.
Not this time, it's because you're the author and you have the illustrations.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. This is called Valentwined. I also read this at the lift that night. Because there's a few that I like. This is one of them. It's a bit sarcastic, but... And since I've written this, I got engaged, and... I understand why people would be so obsessed with Valentine's Day. I just wish that they would carry that through for the rest of the year. And not have a big marketing frenzy. So this is Valentwined. This crazy day, obsessed with passion, culture like a vulture preys on helpless ones, entranced with fashion, youthful lusts last only days. Pink flowers, stinky shower lotion, not too late to find a date, stirring, blurring of emotion, hurry, pick you up at 8. Sugar candies, chocolate hearts, commercial rush on initial crush, cause more harm than good, those tarts, to which end leaves no teeth to brush. And sweetheart be mine is sure to be heard, as romantic antics abound for the day. It's weird how the rest of the year it's deferred, the essence it lessens then fades away. A costly tribute to infatuation, as supple couples co-depend, this glamorous, amorous flatulation, I'm waiting for this day to end. And so flirtation is but fleeting. True love lasts a life or longer, patient, kind, and interceding, ever flowing, growing stronger. I have some opinionated stuff, don't I? But don't worry, it's all in fun. Unless I'm writing about God or something, and then it's in fun, but at the same time, I do have a healthy respect for spiritual things. But religion is open game, or religious people. This one is... coffee. It's horrible stuff. I love it, but I hate it. So I don't drink it as much as I should. It's called A Pilgrimage to Mocha. The taste of Sanka on my lips does nothing for my mental state. My mind's inertia slows a little as my veins cry out for caffeine. The fiend is on the prowl. The caffeine fiend begins to howl. I need a latte as we speak, so my hands won't shake and my brain won't ache. My nostrils throb and my windpipe wheezes. I'm going to order just what I please, as my scruples say double, but I need something stronger. A quadruple'd be trouble, yet I'd last a bit longer. The triple has my name written all over it. Can't wait for the steam to burn my lips. I chew an espresso bean as the moment I savor. But I forgot sugar and chocolate and vanilla flavor. I adjust my order. The barista borders on redline trauma and hypertense drama. His face is full of indignation. I can see he needs revitalization. So I buy him a mocha, and we share a joke that the entire earth needs caffeine in their culture to grease the wheels of world peace. That Starbucks coffee should be in charge, and the little brown beans would be the world's legal tender. For foreign aid, we'd send the finest blend, and all the Earth's conflicts would come to an end. I consume my drink thoroughly, a bit too fast. It inflames my entire being. Globules of light dance around my vision. I try to enjoy what I'm seeing. A color of orange, it turns my gray matter. A rush to the head as neurons scatter. I glance at my stomach and feel a bit fatter. There's a coated, bloated feeling going on in my bladder. So the bloodstream is energized for a time. To ingest so much Java, it can't be a crime. It's a better habit than tobacco or cocaine. Yet have you ever tried putting it right into your vein? If you do, you might someday tell me what you think. I'll just sit in the meantime and sip another drink. one, I call it Prometheus' predicament, because I just figured, well, what if this guy went and got fire from the gods? What if he accidentally caused a forest fire? Anyway, so it's not really mythologically correct. Prometheus' predicament. The fires crackle, spark, and spackle. Heckling specks of laughter cackle. It shouldn't, it could, the wood is burning, lightly learning in its flashes, slowly turning into ashes. Perpetually tasting tongues of fire, torching, scorching its heated desire. It presumed to consume the entire earth. Searing flames peer within its girth. Flickering, snickering, popping, never stopping. The acrid smoke chokes hickory, oak, as the forest floor flares with combustible air. From blazing to brazen horizon, to smoldering older and wiser, the coals of his soul burn bright with fright, his gift to mankind everywhere in sight. And his slowly growing embers warm November and December. The intense, angry, sanguine glow he knows will be remembered. It must be hard to just jump from one thing to another like this, so I encourage people to, you know, how does that sit with you, something like that. This is one I did at your house the other day, David, that I do. Music is such an important gift to me that I find not only for me is it in an instrument or a recording, but it's also often in life, nature, even things that aren't so beautiful that man has created that are kind of lame. I'm not promoting things, obviously. One of the things I reference in the poem is a nuclear weapon, but I'm not promoting that. But at the same time, I thought, it's kind of like rhythm. If you bang something together once, it's noise. If you bang it together twice, it's rhythm. So that's the beginning of music. This is called Music is Life is Poetry. Music is life is poetry, and all that is in between, from the thunderous rhythm of an atom bomb to a garden, quiet, serene. That feeling you get as you wake with a thought so funny you sit up and bellow. Music is sun shining down through the leaves of a forest in autumn yellow. It's the orchestra of the ocean, the waves and their motion as the tides play the tune of the moon. From the egg to the larva to pupa is music and the cracking of a cocoon. The high-pitched snaps of countless mousetraps, the hissing haze of cockroach sprays, the telemetry of a star in collapse as it reaches the end of its days. Music is life is poetry, and all that that contains, from industrial humming and factory drumming to the pounding, desolate desert rains. From the mighty Baroque with its harmonies of the wind in the trees, its crickets chirping, bullfrogs croaking, babies burping and fires stoking. Music is life is poetry, and all that shall remain is to be aware of the music inside and sing the eternal plain. This one is, well, I like Shel Silverstein and Dr. Seuss. They're big influences of mine. And so I'm not afraid to write poems about my nostril hairs. This one is Nostril Gardening. And it's, I think my mother, she appreciates all of my writing and illustrations. This is the one illustration that she despises and can't stand. So you're okay, if you know, in my book, if you don't like it too, because I love my mother. Nostril gardening. Do nose hairs have a mind of their own? Ever there as nostrils flare, casually letting themselves be known. Peeking, poking, tickling, and waving. Curling, unfurling, always misbehaving. Long tenacious weeds from my nasal passage flowing, catching lint and the passing aroma, all the while growing. In number, in length, they have a sense of pride. The olfactoral ego's strength just cannot be denied. It boasts it's not a navel hair, and it's glad it's not under the shoulder, or up on the head to turn gray and be dead, and fall off when it's quite a bit older. But the nose hair is happy, contented really, with a finger as a maid. But I shouldn't wait until it's too late to put them in a braid. No, I think I don't have the patience for it. But who knows? I get ideas like that a lot of times. And, my brother's the one that does the comic strips. This one is Solarium. Can I get a time check just real quick? Okay. Solarium. This is the illustration my dad doesn't like. He thinks it looks like the flower's head is gonna get popped off or something. The twilight through the skylight, iron pyrite hues of gold, sends brilliant and resilient beams of color, blithe and bold. The room in flower, illumined shower, a powerful sparkled glaze, humidifies the mist which glistens pristine in the haze. The window sweats and knows no threats of darkness all pervading. It reflects the insects and directs the light from fading. The butterfly, it mutters why, and hears no uttered cry, for it lacks ears as it appears to gaze upon the sky. The greenhouse, so serene house, home of growth and warming cheer. Dewdrops shine from a cactus spine, and I find the divine quite near. I want to point out all the illustrations are first draft. If I make a mistake, I usually just change it into something that I can make into something better. So like that last one, I probably, if I would have known that I was drawing that when I started, I would have made it a smiley face or something happy, but. Yeah, or scared, or yeah, surprised is good. This one, I'd like some feedback maybe because I don't really know what to think of it. And, it's called True Freedom, as in three words, True Freedom. The key to living free is giving service to the nervous, to juggle with the struggle and snuggle with the soul. Understanding life is simply standing under crunches. People rolling with the hunches, the punches on parole. The path to wisdom is dumb if it's sought or bought alone. Experience, not theory, hence the weary want a whole. Brothers helping others gives the world a better face. Forgive forgetters, or it places fetters, taking toll. The greatest gift to listen will uplift the sinking man. On the brink of coming clean, he leans to either pole. Attaining joy elusive is conducive to the way, yet each day is just a mirror, ever nearer to the goal. Sometimes, if I'd fault or criticize my work, I'm not always out to make a point. I like it when it comes together to make a point, but you might notice, in that one especially, the words, I just love putting words together and the way they sound and interact, even within a sentence, within a paragraph, within a poem. And then if I can break my own rules, I would do it in a heartbeat, because it's what I've come to love. This one is my drum poem. It's called Gypsy Jive. And this illustration fit the poem, that's why I put it in there. It's not, I think this illustration was originally a colored pastel, but I just love it so much that it had to go in the book. Gypsy Jive. The rhythm trickles from the small man's fingers, percolating, scintillating, always lingers while creating. The painted lady dances with a tambourine in hand. She jingles joyously as she moves, barefoot, her toes sift the sand. The barrel-bellied fellow booms the bass with bludgeoning blows. Eyebrows furrow as sweat beads burrow to the roots of the beat that he sows. The calloused man with the calloused hands has ecstatic fire in his eyes. With a toothy grin, he strikes the skin upon which his happiness lies. The ethereal chatter of the talking drum has come to gossip and spout. The wise old woman playing it has nothing to hide as she hits the hide, for she knows what the drum is speaking about. A child in the distance is wild with resistance and curiously drawing near. Always seems like the children are the first to give in to the urge to enjoy what they hear. And the groove is entwined with nature itself, the systems, the cycles, the seasons. Our hearts always beating, repeating, repeating, is as old as rhyme and reason. This one is called All Sizes Fit One. And the illustration is about when Paul was preaching to the Greeks at the Areopagus, and they had their idol or statue altar to the unknown God. And he expounded on that and showed them Jesus. But this poem is not about that, but it's something to put up on the there. All sizes fit one. Twixt random encounters, I find it odd that people are trying to size up God. They say he is large. Why, that's very grand. They say he's obscure. They just don't understand. Not that I am myself more enlightened. If I ponder too long, I may feel rather frightened. Yet working through self-conscious fear, I'm brightened. By contemplating God, my life may be heightened. God is colossal, prodigious, and vast, transcending enormity through future and past. But at times he is tiny, microscopically small, imperceptible, not noticed at all. God is every size at once, all together, extending in every direction forever. Oh, great. Let me get this straight. Infinitely growing, ever shrinking, keeping my petite brain ever thinking, creating the concept of space here and now. He's as large or as small as my mind will allow. Contemplation is never done when plumbing God's depths. All sizes fit one. That's one that I hate just rattling it off, because that I look at one, two, three lines of that and I really could just get lost in it, because it's not the poem that's deep, it's just that God is deep. I'm like barely referencing it. I'm gonna read this one. It's called Growth Spurt. The flower of youth, so elusive, on the surface a great decoy, holds the glitter of truth that's exclusive, for youth's really measured in joy. When I was a child, I thought as a child, I spoke as a child, I smoked as a child. But then I became a man and put away all childish things. I eagerly sought to grow up, embracing the hardness of heart that it brings. Now I've become a child again by letting adulthood go. The inner child is loving and thankful, and joy makes the countenance glow. This transformation we all must endure. Life stages we find will refine and make pure. The age of the body's irrelevant. What counts is the age of the soul. Most find youth at the end of their lives, if ever they reach their goal. So if anyone tries convincing me that youth is measured in years, they're likely trying to prove to themselves, to wallow amidst their fears. And that's one of those opinionated poems that I don't know if I agree with now. Because I've, you know, every time I come up with a new chapter, I mean, in my life, it's like, okay, I've learned something new. Does that make sense? I might look at this 20 years from now and just laugh.
Do you throw a lot of stuff away like a potter does?
I don't necessarily throw it away. But you only see about 40%, 50% of what I write.
Because you can keep the germination, can't you, and change it maybe sometime.
Mm-hmm. But some stuff I just, it's just not, it's not as accessible to.
Do you write music?
I do. Some of it's just crap. I'll admit it.
Because I like to perform everything, but I would never write it.
Okay, I see. I like to do both. I like to write songs, but I'm leaving that to Fiona these days, my fiance. She's the one that's obviously more gifted, so. In that, so I just kind of back her up on the drums. This is called Douglas the Fir. Mm-hmm. And I do appreciate very much, by the way, your feedback and comments. The tree yawns intensely as another decade passes. Arms outstretched in awe, appreciation in its branches. A year to a tree is the blink of an eye. The epitome of patience without having to try. The contours of its smiling face change subtly in its bark as another war is fought and lost. What cost to a world that's in the dark? Its knots are not some missing limbs, but gifts to humanity. Men seek to prune and deplete a resource, yet they spread the love of a tree. It summons the wind to wave its arms in greeting or goodbye, And to get to those hard-to-reach places, it raises a hurricane to satisfy. It buries its bare feet under the ground, not to hide or show pride, but to hear the sound of the earth when she speaks, an even older creature. She's slow to react and slower to anger, yet quick to be a teacher. The leaves of a tree always beckon and shout, as we like insects are buzzing about. I must seem like a fly to a tree by and by, for we are all in a hurry to live and to die. Oh, we'll stop once a day or a month or a year, remarking of beauty and sounding sincere. Had we a millennia in which to see the comings and goings in the life of a tree, our perception of inanimate objects would change, realizing it's we who are very strange. This is dangling. As autumn's wind begins to ebb, the leaf suspended, poised, not dead. It tangled in a spider's web, spinning on a woven thread. Its reddish tint is winter's hint for birds to fly as trees undress. The sun outdone by frosty glint, to return when one can only guess. Oh, autumn, you have life within, as soft rain freshens breezy air. This leaf cannot escape its spin, 'twill be forever dangling there. And a lot of the first forms of the poetry ends up looking like this, just because it's easier to write it out, but in the manuscript I would probably take out, you know, scan the image and take it out and put text in instead of that, just because I want to be consistent throughout the book.
What are you going to call the book?
The book is titled Ironies in the Fire.
Oh, it is?
Yes, that's why. Okay. I was using that title in the for this session.
Who's the publisher?
I wish I knew. I do not have a publisher at the time. I'd like to have one.
I can help you.
Talk to me, please. Gosh, that'd be great. This is called Textures. Mountains, the teeth of the wreath of God. Spiking, so striking, in an instant I'm awed. In tandem, at random, hit the towering peaks. At noon, rock rough-hewn, its shadow sneaks. Such stark pockmarks on God's earthly face. He created, paraded this isolated place. As old as time, they chime his story. The high slopes declare the scope of God's glory. My tongue's getting tired. This is one I love. My dad is also a writer, and he gives me honest opinions, and a lot of times his honesty is honest praise. This is one that he did not like. He just turned sour at the whole poem because he didn't like my image of stark pockmarks on God's face. But being a stubborn artist, I decided that it's my poem and I'm going to keep it the way I wrote it. Even though it isn't as nice as I wanted it to be. I think I am. I'm going to read one that doesn't have an illustration. I'm talking about my dad. So I'm going to read two more. Neither of them have illustrations. So this one's called Papa Paternal. He is, thank you. That's great. He is a creative writer as well as a poet, and he was experimenting with a very free style of dot 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 dot, and just kind of letting it roll out of the tongue like a big waterfall of poetic drool. And I loved it. And so on his birthday, I borrowed that style for a poem and wrote it right kind of back to him. This is called Pa Pa Paternal. His name is Thomas. The papa flop floppin', never stoppin', always coppin', the attitude dude in a popping witty mood. He's Walter Mitty wooed, a pretty witty mood dude. The papa never falters, never halters like Gibraltar. He's the island love you land, lonely stone in the midst of the sea. Do you see? We see the outcropping, flop flopping, unstopping papa doing chores or mopping floors, chopping boring, pouring rain. In the pain within the rain, in the rain and pain again. Not what he'd like, but what she'd like, or what we'd like. Like a serving, unswerving, unnerving, the bebop, papa, paternal. Who could top a papa with a family to love above himself on a shelf? The tom-tom, no Thomas. The Thomas with a promise. Just give him a root beer float, 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 at the end of the day, and he'll float, float away. You could never pop a papa balloon too soon, as into his bed, head flop, flop, flopping, not stopping to think or to blink, at the brink of a Walter Mitty mood. Pretty kitty float, float, floats on the papa, never stop a second to reckon he's home. And the last one, this is like a month old, and I'd love feedback on this, and anyway, it's called The Immortal Chortle. The first burst of bubbly stubbly mirth gives birth to a soul-drenching hello, a thirst-quenching bellow. Jello jiggling, giggling from a double-grinning chin, wriggling smile, no denial, wild laughter lies within. The fit of chuckles buckles and peals as the hearty chortle immortally heals. What joy employed in merriment, the grand unplanned experiment. Humor is rumored to stir in the spur of the moment it's opened, guffaws in the jaws, issuing out like a spout from a geyser. No miser could hoard all the laughter that roared. The disparity of hilarity to the parity amiss. Ironic, yet a chronic folly, jolly kin of bliss. There's a lot in there. So thank you very much, guys. I appreciate you sitting through here. And